You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
Well, good morning, MC3. I am currently in Jacksonville, Florida. If everything went according to plan, we are down there for Tommy's 16th birthday. Which he's almost 17, but he's a Jacksonville Jaguars fan, so we are going to a game this afternoon and against the Chargers. So we're down there enjoying his birthday. But we are continuing this series called The Story, Second Edition, and it's a second edition because it's revised and expanded. We did this series a number of years ago, and we are making it. I've added more content and giving you some more detail with it. And so if you were not here for the last 2 weeks, you need to go back and check out the live stream for that at our website, mc3church.org/the-story-2nd-second-edition. So let's review, because if you weren't here, we're gonna catch up. Let's talk about the Old Testament flow, or maybe it's down here in the corner. And it's broken down into three major categories. So, the first major category that we have all the way on the left there, that is called what? Okay, nobody answered. Seriously, talk to the screen. That's called what? I'll pretend you did. I'll pretend you yelled out history. So yeah, that's history. And then the second major category, these are books that are poetic, and we call them what? Poetry. Very good. And then the third group here, these are the prophets that are speaking. So we call these the books of prophecy. Excellent. I'm saying excellent. You guys might be completely silent. You're like, what an idiot up there. Come on. Okay. Anyway, so in the history section in these books, it's broken down into two subdivisions. The first subdivision, or the first five books of the Bible, and five in Latin is Penta. And so we call this the Pentateuch, remember? And then the last 12 here, I think it's 12, they don't really have a great title, so we just call them more history. And then over on the prophecy side, there's two subcategories there, subdivisions. And the top five there are bigger. They're bigger. And so because they're bigger, we call them the major prophets. And then if the major ones were bigger, then the smaller ones are called the... That's right, boys and girls. They're the minor prophets. Okay, so that's where we're going. And this is a summary. If you were here last week as we did the first part of the story, and we'll review in a little bit. But we covered the five books of the Pentateuch, which were written by Moses, and also Job, because we realized that Job took place in the time of the generations during the people there, and we talked about that last week. So by the end of the series, if I do everything the right way, we should have all those checked off, that we've looked at where they are all taking place. So let's review the story so far. And I'm going to give you a picture, and then when you see that picture, you need to tell me what is the title of that chapter of the story. So here's our very first picture. High quality. It is a picture of the world with someone speaking. We called chapter one, it ended with a shun, and chapter one was called? All right, yes, creation. That was Genesis 1 to 11. And again, during creation, this isn't on the screen, but we talked about four major events that took place in creation. Then we had the second chapter we looked at, and there was this handsome-looking fellow there. And this also ended in shuns. And we called chapter 2, what? Generations. Very good, yeah. And that's Genesis 12 to 50. And there we learned about four main people. So we had four major events and four people. And then the third chapter we looked at had this amazing symbol here. And that was called, it ends with shun. Ready? On one, two, three. Migration. Very good. And that was where we finished our story. That was the story of the Israelites coming out of the land of Egypt, and how they got there, of course, was during the generations chapter. We ended in at the end of the book of Deuteronomy, which we'll pick up there in a moment. But the point this week is that the conflict in the story continues with the kingdom. And we saw last week that there was this, that God created these people, you know, humanity, and this world, and it caused some conflict. And now the conflict is going to continue. It's going to grow, and it's going to continue, and we're going to see there's going to be some kingdom that's going to come into place. So let me jump down here to our map and do a little bit of reviewing. Oh, let me get my handy-dandy pointer. So first of all, and again, you're going to talk to the screen. That's weird, but that's okay because you're in church and this is MC3 and we do weird things and I'm weird. So we're all good. Okay. So first of all, what is this general area here? The land of what? Israel. Very good. Very good. And we've got three bodies of water here. We talked about the Med. We talked about the Red. And then what is this body of water right here? That is called the Dead Sea. Very good. Bueller, anyone? The Dead Sea. Oh, where am I? Pointer up there. And then right above the Dead Sea, there was this river. It's a very important river. What is the name of that river? The Jordan River. Very good. And like, seriously, if no one's talking, I look like a complete idiot. But, you know, I've done worse things. So that's the Jordan River. And we ended our story last week, chapter 3, right here. And we ended with what we call 10 again. And the book of Deuteronomy is Moses was repeating the 10 commandments to the nation of Israel, to the Israelites after they came out of Egypt, because the first generation was wandering in the desert because their parents did not think they could conquer the land. And so they wandered as a punishment for their sin for 40 years. So that generation died off. And they come back here and they're right on this side of the Jordan River getting ready to cross, to go into the promised land that's here. One thing I wanted to mention that I didn't say last week is that the covenant, the promise that God gave to the Israelites, we know them as the Ten Commandments. But the Ten Commandments were just the beginning. And again, we said last week that the Ten Commandments, there were 10 big ones. But then the entire rest of the book of Exodus talked about the tabernacle and rules for this temporary dwelling place, because the tabernacle was a tent. So it was a place where God would meet with his people. There were rules and laws about that. There were rules about all sorts of other things, and the entire book of Leviticus was about worship. So there was more than just 10 commandments. There were all these laws because God was making his people different from the nations around them. And with all these laws, one of the things that's important to remember, we talked about the Abrahamic covenant, and that was an unconditional covenant, which meant that God was going to, he was going to do it no matter what. But the Mosaic covenant, or the Old Testament law, as it is called, was a conditional covenant. And God was saying to Moses and the Israelites, this was an if-then. If you do this, then I will bless you. Then I will honor you. So if you obey my laws, then it will go well for you. And so there was this tension back and forth about obedience led to blessing, disobedience led to consequences. And again, that was a conditional covenant, because if the Israelites disobeyed, then there would be some consequences to that. Again, with the Abrahamic covenant, there were no conditions. God was doing it no matter what. So that's important to remember. So that brings us here. And so there's your pretty map if you want to see it. And that's also in your YouVersion notes there. Hopefully you've been following along. But this brings us to the fourth chapter in our story. And we're calling chapter 4 invasion. So again, we're looking at creation, generations, migration, and now we're in invasion. And of course, for every one of these chapters, we draw a fancy little picture. And this one's like complicated, so I hope I can do it right. So it looks something like this. And there, that's like a, oh wait, my sword goes backwards. There. So there's a sword. That's high-end stuff. But that is the symbol for invasion, because we're looking at the book of Joshua now. And the first part of this thing is called Joshua. They're all J's with this chapter in invasion. And Joshua is a character that we meet, and we meet him. We actually already met him because he was one of the two spies that went into the land 40 years earlier. And when they had to spy out the land, the 10 other spies, 10 bad, were saying, no, we couldn't do it. We can't do this. We can't do this. But Joshua and Caleb said, no, we've got God. We can definitely do this. There aren't going to be any problems. We can handle this. So he was one of the ones that lived after that first generation died off. And now we're at the end of Moses' life. And so at the end of the book of Deuteronomy, right before Joshua, Moses dies. And again, he's reminding the next generation of the rules before they go into the land. And Joshua is now the new leader of the Israelites. He has taken over for Moses. And God says to him multiple times, be strong and courageous. You're about to lead these people to the promised land, the land that I promised to Abraham. And I made that promise to Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph. And I'm making that promise to Moses and to you, Joshua. And I'm leading you into this land. And so Joshua is now the new leader of the Israelites, getting ready to go into this land that was promised, 500 years earlier to the people. Maybe even more. Yeah, about 500 years earlier. And so now it's time to go in. And as we said on our map, which we'll come to in a moment, they were at the edge of the Jordan River. And so our second J is Jordan. They're at the Jordan River. And right before they're getting ready to go in, they're camped on that side. And this time they send in more spies to the land. And they spy out the land. And they come back saying, yeah, it is amazing. And this time, they're obedient and say, yeah, God can do it. And one of the interesting things that happens here is they go in and they go to the city of Jericho, which is, we're going to get to that in a moment. They go into the city and they stay at the house of a prostitute named Rahab, who hides these spies as they go in to check out the land. And what's really wild is Rahab realizes that the true God is bigger than their fake gods, than their false gods, than their idols. And she says, you know, I want to be an Israelite. Can I become a Jewish person? And not by blood, but by faith. Can I follow your God? And the spies say, absolutely. You know, and it's just a beautiful moment there. But what I really wanted to mention was the way, when we get to this in a moment, the spies said, look, we want to protect your family when it's time for us to go into the land. So we want you to hang a scarlet cord or a scarlet rope from the window of your house, and all of the family that you bring into your house, into your house there, we will protect. You will be safe. If they don't come in, they're not going to be safe and protected, but we promise to protect those. And I just think it's interesting when you consider what happened with the Passover earlier, with the Israelites basically 40 years earlier, that if there was red blood on the doorpost, everyone in that house would be safe. And again, you've got this theme of blood, of red, protecting and keeping someone safe, rescuing someone from destruction. So it's not accidental. So what's really cool about the Jordan River is they're at the edge of the Jordan River, and it is at flood stage, and it's crazy. The water is overflowing, and of course we've seen rivers at flood stage around here, and it's kind of a scary thing. And God tells the people carrying the Ark of the Covenant, which was where the Ten Commandments were placed, and that was part of the law, the rules with the tabernacle, which again we talked about the Dwell series last week. That was part of it, and so the Ten Commandments, for all intents and purposes, the Ten Commandments are in there, and God says, I want the priests, the Levites were the priests, to step into the water at flood stage. And when they stepped into the water, the water upstream stopped flowing, and the people crossed the river on dry ground, going into the land. And again, a second miraculous experience of God. This time he didn't part the seas, but giving them a dry ground to walk across. So that was the Jordan River, which brought them over to the west side of the Jordan River. Now they're in the promised land. And the first city they come across, which is our third J, is the city of Jericho. And you might be familiar with the story of Jericho. God told the Israelites to do kind of a crazy thing. He tells them to march around the city one time. And it's a large city. It's got huge walls. He says, walk around one time for 6 days, one time a day, for 6 days straight. And then on the seventh day, you're going to walk around seven times, and you're going to blow the horns and yell, blow trumpets, saxophones, whatever, and yell, and then the walls are going to come down. And they obeyed God. It made no sense, but God was again showing that this was his battle. This was his thing. This wasn't about their ability or their skill or their army or anything like that. And of course, the walls come tumbling down. So Joshua fought the Battle of Jericho, and they that was the first city that they conquered. And of course, it's a very well-known story in the book of Joshua, in the chapter of our story called Invasion. So let me jump back down to our map. Again, we're right here with, my pointer is less pointy. It's kind of like, rock on, man. Can you see that? Rock on. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, where am I? Here, we're at the Jordan River. And so the people cross the Jordan River. Miraculously, the Israelites, they move into the land. And right about here is where Jericho is. And this isn't something you necessarily have to memorize. I mean, Israel's important. The Jordan River's important. Jericho, just so you know, it's right on the other side of the Jordan River. And that's the first city that they come across. They walk around the city six times, and then seven times on the seventh day. God brings the walls down. The Israelites go in. They are told by God, when they go into this land, and I should jump back up here so you can see me. They're told by God, when they go into the land there's your pretty map, to go in and to drive out or destroy everyone. And he says, because these people are going to be a problem for you if you don't. These are godless people. They do not follow the true and living God. And you're supposed to drive out or destroy all of them. And we talked about this during one of the Crop 2 series. Like, that seems really harsh and really cruel. But God was just saying, no, these people are awful sinners. They deserve death. But you guys you're going to be different. You're set apart. So do you need to drive them out of this land? So that they're not going to become a stumbling block. They don't become a problem for you. And of course, they find Rahab and her family because of the scarlet cord, the scarlet thread that's there, and rescue her. But that's basically the big event in the book of Joshua, which then kind of, there's multiple other battles, and they go in and they invade the land. They kind of go right into the middle, and then they go south, and then they go north, I don't know. Can you jump back to the map for a second for the Jordan? Not that, one before that. There we go. So, yeah, basically they come into the land here at Jericho. They conquer the cities here, move their way to the south, and then move their way to the north, and then have the land, the promised land, that God had promised them. So, thank you. And then there's, again, multiple battles there. That's what the book is. And then we get to the end. The second half of the book is what we've got: Joshua, Jordan, Jericho, and drawing boundaries. It's a J sound, so that's close enough. I know it's not, it's a D. I know how to spell. I don't know how to do math, but I can spell. But yeah, drawing borders. And what happened here is, if you remember, when we went back to the generations time, that Jacob had 12 sons. And those 12 sons, he actually adopted Joseph's two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh. They became his own. We talked about that last week. It was an honor to Joseph for how he had rescued his family. And those 12 sons, and Levi was one of the sons, but we learned last time, too, that he would be scattered because of something he did to his dad. And so that left 12 sons. Basically 12 tribes, 12 groups of people, 12 families that had grown and grown and grown. And remember, they were in Egypt for 400 years. So these 12 families multiplied and multiplied and multiplied over the course of 400 years. And now there's millions of them. And so we get to the end of the book of Joshua, or the second half of the book of Joshua, and they're finally in the land. And now they're drawing the borders for which part every tribe is going to have. And this map, I'm just throwing it out here just so you can see it. Because it's just worth knowing a little bit. And up here, I'm going to be going from north. I get my pointer again. From north to south, they were divided up, and there's no borders here. I don't have lines on here because there's not even room for that. But we start with the tribe of Asher. Asher was at the north. was one of the sons of Jacob. And then going from Asher, you've got Naphtali. Also up in the north there, right there. I should get my pointer again. Naphtali, you can see it on the screen. And then after Naphtali, below Naphtali, you've got Zebulun. Zebulun was also a tribe. And what I'm saying about this isn't where these people were. This is where the families lived. Like, this became the state of Asher, and this became the state of Naphtali, and the state of Zebulun, if you will. That was how they had their borders there. And then below, south of Zebulun, is, let me get this way, is Issachar. You've got Issachar south of Zebulun. And then what happens next is the tribe of Manasseh. The tribe of Manasseh was huge. And they got an allotment. And if you remember during the Stuck series, which you probably don't, but right before the Israelites went into the land and during the book of Numbers, the tribe of Manasseh, half tribe of Manasseh, Gad and Reuben, they all said, you know what? I know that this is the promised land over here, but we really like the land here over on the east side of the Jordan. And they said, can we stay there and settle there? And God said, that's fine. Moses said, that's fine. As long as you promise to fight with your brothers, your family, to go into the land. And so they did that. And then Manasseh was then given one part of the land on this side, on the east of the Jordan. But Manasseh also had land on the west side. They were the biggest, as far as land size, Manasseh, the half, and you'll hear in the Bible, the half tribe of Manasseh. So there's Manasseh east. Let's see if I can get their pointer. Manasseh east right there and Manasseh west right there. And actually, we talked about this just a couple weeks ago in the Skeletons in the Closet series when Moses said to the people, you know, you need to follow through on your commitment to go to battle with us, because if not, he says, you can be sure your sin will find you out. And you might have remembered that from a few weeks ago when we did the Skeletons in the Closet series. Okay, moving on. Then there's the tribe of Gad is also here on the east side. They were the other ones. And then on the east side of the Jordan, you've got the tribe of, get my head out of the way, Reuben. And so then over on the west side, right, is that the correct? Yeah, that's west and east. Yeah, on the west side, we've got Ephraim, the tribe of Ephraim here. And if you remember, Ephraim and Manasseh, those were Joseph's sons. So they're considered sons of Jacob because as an honor to Joseph, Jacob, or Israel, who was renamed, Jacob adopted Manasseh and Ephraim as his own. So that's why you don't see a tribe of Joseph in here at all. Where are we next? Then we've got Dan. Dan's a little tribe over here. And then next to Dan is a very tiny tribe, the tribe of Benjamin that's in this area. And then below Benjamin, we've actually got what I'm calling Judah A and Judah B. And the reason it's called Judah A and Judah B down south here is because Judah covered this entire land. They were definitely one of the bigger nations, the bigger tribes there. And inside of Judah was the tribe of Simeon. And interestingly enough, Simeon, where's Simeon there showing up? Yeah, Simeon was inside of Judah because it was the same punishment that Jacob gave them to Simeon as to Levi because of what they did to him. He said, you're going to be scattered among your brothers. So Simeon was stuck inside. And one thing you don't see, like I said, is the tribe of Levi, because the Levites, they were in the Leviticus book, they were the temple, there's no temple yet. They were the worship leaders in the tabernacle, which was a tent. And so there were cities for the Levites all throughout the land because they would lead the people in worship in their time there. So that's just a quick summary. Here's an amazing map. You've got this in your YouVersion notes that you can follow along. So there you go. Don't ever forget that. Now you've got it, and it's right there for you. But that's basically where the tribes were for this last section of Joshua, this invasion chapter. We've got Joshua, Jordan, Jericho, and drawing borders. And that is the chapter of invasion. And so, that'll be in a second. So that's a chapter of invasion. That's just a kind of a small little story. It's just one book as we look at it. But that kind of sets up. Now the people of Israel are in the promised land. But one thing, and we're going to see this in a moment, one thing that happened is that the people didn't actually drive out and destroy all the people there. They decided, you know, it's easier to make to kind of make some agreements. Let's make some peace treaties with the people. I like some of the stuff they have, so we're gonna do trades. And so, like, there was this idea of, even though God said to drive them out, the people were like, well, there's some good reasons to keep them here, and that was disobedience to God, which will become an issue in a moment. So chapter 4 is invasion, and that leads us on to chapter 5. Chapter 5 of the story is called Decision. And Decision covers the books of Judges and Ruth. And I want to make sure I've got my note here. And we'll talk mostly about the book of Judges. But what is interesting, oh, here it is. Let me draw my symbol first. Sorry. Let's get my symbol out here. Then I'll talk to you about it. My symbol here when it comes to this era of decision is a... Oh, that's not so great. There, does that look like a gavel? That's a gavel. But interestingly enough, a judge wasn't, at least in this time, in biblical times here, a judge was not a courtroom person. A judge was a leader. They were the ones that led the nation of Israel. And so that's what a judge was. So when you hear judges, we did a whole series called Spiral Bound about this, where we went through all the judges. So you can find that on the slide after the point this morning and on our website. But judges were leaders. And the reason Judges and Ruth are in the decision era, the decision chapter, is because the book of Ruth starts with, the words are, in the days when the judges ruled. So the book of Ruth takes place there. And the book of Ruth is a beautiful book about how God continued to keep his promises through the line of this lady named Ruth and her family. But we're not really going to get into that. But it happens during the time of this chapter that we call decision. And so the book of Judges, as leaders, it starts with this sin cycle. So that's the first part of Judges, of the decision chapter. Chapter 5 is sin cycle. And that is... You know, that's what's important for you to know, to fill out there in your notes there. And the sin cycle is an interesting thing, and I'll show you what that looks like specifically. But here is why the sin cycle was a problem. Because we begin the book of Judges seeing Joshua has now died. And the book of Judges picks up basically right in that moment. And there's actually a little bit of crossover between the beginning of Judges and the end of Joshua, because Joshua talks about Joshua dying. And then the book of Judges, he's alive again. But it's crossing over a little bit. But then in Judges chapter 2, this is what happens. It says, the angel of the Lord went up from Gilgal to Bochim and said to the Israelites. So God is speaking. The angel of the Lord there is not just... When you see the phrase angel of the Lord in the Old Testament, it's God himself. We'll just say it's God himself for all intents and purposes. It says, the angel of the Lord went up from Gilgal to Bochim and said to the Israelites. So he came to them in the land where they've got these 12 tribes now, and says, I brought you out of Egypt into this land that I swore to give your ancestors. So again, that promise. I promised that you were going to get this land. Now I brought you out of Egypt and you're in the land. And I said I would never break my covenant with you. And that was an unconditional covenant. God says, I'm going to do this no matter what. He says, for your part, you were not to make any covenants with the people living in the land. So again, there's that thing. God said, no, you need to drive out or destroy them. And that's part of that conditional covenant of the Mosaic law, the law of the Ten Commandments and the rules associated with it. And he goes on and says, instead, you were to destroy their altars. You weren't supposed to make covenants or become friends with the people there. You were to destroy their altars to these fake gods and drive them out. And he says, but you disobeyed my command. Why did you do this? So now I declare that I will no longer drive out the people living in your land. So they had their shot and muffed it. And God says, I'm not doing this anymore. He says, they will be thorns in your sides, and their gods would be a constant temptation to you. And so that's how the book of Judges starts. And chapter 2 kind of gives an overview of this sin cycle that we see in the book of Judges, because the people didn't obey God. They didn't drive the foreigners, the heathen, the idol worshippers out. Instead, they became friends with them and made covenants, made agreements with them. And so they're going to be a problem now. And that's what leads to this sin cycle that we see in chapter 5. So that's the first part of the decision, is sin cycle. Well, here it is kind of broken down into pieces. And again, Judges chapter 2 summarizes this. But then as you read through the rest of the book, this cycle repeats 12 times. 12 times. So the sin cycle looks like this. First of all, the foreign nations, you know, the people that are living among them, cause the people to turn away from God, and they get into a spot of rebellion. They rebel against God, turning their back on him and disobeying him and ignoring him. And so God, as part of that conditional law, the law of the Old Testament, the law of the Old Covenant, that God says, you disobeyed, so now you're going to have to suffer the consequences. And so he brings retribution. And what retribution almost every time in the book of Judges is an outside nation is causing a problem. They're kind of coming in to cause a problem. They're trying to invade. They're doing things. And it makes life miserable. And because of that, the people then cry out to God with requests. They request that God helps them. God, help us. You know, what's going on? Sorry, we were wrong. We shouldn't have turned our backs on you. And of course, he's like, yeah, now you get it. There was discipline there with that retribution. So they request to God. Well, then God then rescues them. And the rescue, every time you see rescue, that's when a judge shows up. That's when God brings a leader in to lead the people out of their whether it's, you know, oppression from this other country, whether there's an invading army or whatever that is, God raises up a judge to rescue them. And then after that judge does his thing, we see that every time there's a period of rest. There's a time where the people are following God again. They're obeying him. They're sticking with him and staying true to him. But as time goes on, they start to wander away. And this cycle repeats itself. And this cycle, like I said, repeats itself 12 times over a span of 400 years in the book of Judges. And every time, the pattern, again, the same thing. There's a time of rest, but then they turn their back on God. God brings in a nation or a problem that causes them to go, wait, God, what's wrong? We're so sorry. We were wrong. And they cry out. They request for help, and God brings a rescuer, a judge in. And then after that time, they turn and follow God again. And again, it is a 400-year pattern with 12 different judges. And so that's what we see. And we did a series, I said, called Spiral Bound, where we talked about the 12 judges. And that's why it was called Spiral Bound. They were bound by this spiral for 400 years. And so in Judges, you've got the sin cycle. That's how it starts. And then the book, this chapter of decision, we see that there are six major judges. And the reason, same reason why we have major prophets is that these judges, there was a lot more written about them. Some judges are like a verse. You got not much to go on. But there were six major judges, and then there were six minor judges. And so this era, this chapter of decision, with sin cycle, six major, six minor, and that covers the books of Judges and Ruth, because that all takes place. All this time it's happening in the land of Israel, in the promised land, in the land with these 12 tribes at this point is called the nation of Israel. And the interesting thing is that the book of Judges ends with this statement. This is the last verse in Judges chapter 21, the last verse of the last chapter. And it says this: in those days, Israel had no king. All the people did whatever seemed right in their own eyes. And so this idea of Israel not having a king and people did what was right in their own eyes, and that happens a couple of times in the book of Judges. But that's how this ends, because it's setting up this chapter 6. And chapter 6 of the story, is called Coronation. And of course, where's my pen? It's in my pocket. And of course, a coronation is what happens for someone who becomes a king and wears a crown and has a scepter, which we talked about last week, and that's going to come back. And so that is a crown that is not someone saying live long and prosper. I don't know which camera I'm looking at here, but live long and prosper is not what this is. That's a crown. And so this era, this chapter of the story, chapter 6 of the story, covers 1 Samuel through 2 Chronicles. And I want to say a couple of things before we get into this. That 1 and 2, so let me just clarify. We're looking at the history books. So we've already looked at Joshua, Judges, and Ruth. And now we're in 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel, 1 Kings, 2 Kings, 1 Chronicles, and 2 Chronicles. What you need to understand is that 1 and 2 Chronicles, the Chronicles, are written in parallel to 1 Samuel through 2 Kings. And so Chronicles takes place, these two books, if I'm using four fingers for those four books, these two books are taking place during this time. You see me on the camera there somewhere? Right there, yeah. They're taking place during those two times. These are not gang signs. This is four books of Samuel and Kings and two books of Chronicles. They take place during the same time. Now, the interesting thing about Chronicles is that Chronicles only tells the story of the kings of Judah. What does that mean? Just give me a few minutes. We'll talk about the kings of Judah. But Chronicles is only about Judah, where Kings talks about the kings of Israel and Judah. But just so you know, so this is covering those six books during that time. So they're written at the same time. So again, as we talked about some of the other books, and specifically when we get into the Gospels, very similar. You can't read at the end of 2 Kings, turn the page to 1 Chronicles, and expect the story to continue. You're going to suddenly jump back much earlier because Chronicles was the chronicle of the kings of Judah. So going to where we start this story, we just read in the end of Judges that the people, there was no king. Israel didn't have a king. And the interesting thing about that was that all the other nations did have kings. All the other nations had kings. And of course, they came from Egypt, and Pharaoh was the title. It basically meant king. That was the king of Egypt. And the people were kind of fed up. And we see in 1 Samuel 8, 1 Samuel, by the way, Samuel is a judge. He was judge number 13. The book of Samuel starts out, which is written by Samuel. It's his story, but he was judge number 13. So he was the leader at that time. And in chapter 8, the people go to Samuel and say, hey, we want a king. We want a king like everyone else. And Samuel's like, I don't think that's a good idea. We have God. We follow God. And Samuel goes to God and says, hey, your people want a king. And God says, I am their king. What was called a theocracy. I am the king of these people. And I will lead them. I've provided for them. I've cared for them. And they're like, no. And so Samuel goes back and says, listen, God's your king. He's the one that's rescued you. He's the one that's provided for you. He's the one that cares for you. And it says here in verse 19 through 20, it says, but the people refused to listen to Samuel. No, they said, we want a king over us. Then we will be like all the other nations, with a king to lead us and to go out before us and fight our battles. And so this coronation chapter is all about the kings of Israel. And of course, this was something at the end, when they said this to Samuel, God said, fine, give them a king, but it's not going to go well. And so the first part of the coronation chapter is Saul 40. King Saul was the first king of Israel, and he reigned for 40 years. So it's kind of helpful that the kings reign in a very nice, convenient numbers. But Saul reigned for 40 years. And what we learn about Saul is that Saul was not fully devoted to God. He only had a half heart for God and ended up, just walking away from God at the end of his life, the end of his reign. And it didn't go well. And so Saul was one of the ones that the people chose. It said Saul was taller than others. And he was just a glorious looking man. And the people were like, that's the guy that we want. And Saul eventually is going to die. But God says, look, I'm not letting the people choose my king. I'm going to choose a king. And God had Samuel go and anoint this boy. This peon shepherd boy who had older brothers that were much better looking than him, much stronger than him. But God chose this next guy and said, he is a man after my own heart. And of course, Samuel was like, are you sure, God? And God's like, yes, Samuel, anoint him as the second king of Israel, because people look at the outward appearance, but I look at the heart. God looks at the heart. And so then the second king of Israel was David. And David was a good king. He followed God with a whole heart. He sinned. He messed up because David, spoiler, is a human. He's a sinner. But he reigned for 40 years, and he established the capital of Israel. And so just so you're aware of this, just to catch us up on our map, let me jump back down here. So again, this here is the 12 tribes and the kingdom of Israel at this point. And again, we're talking about 400 years past since they went in there. So this is 400 years later. We're looking at 800, almost 1,000 years after the Exodus, that this is the land of Israel. And remember, we looked at this the very first week. This little star here, where am I? There we go. The star, that city, what is the name of that important city that's the capital of Israel? I hope you all just yelled out, Jerusalem! Yes, because Jerusalem is the answer. And Jerusalem was the capital of the nation of Israel. It's where the throne was. It's where David set up his throne. And And so that's where this story is taking place, because David's in Jerusalem. And of course, there's your map, and you can also find that in YouVersion. But David ruled for 40 years. And one of the things that was impressive was that God had made another covenant. And God made a covenant this time with David. And in 2 Samuel 7, you can read, and we will, we'll hear it, at God's covenant with David. And I need to clarify that this covenant was another unconditional covenant. God was going to do this. Now, we didn't have time to talk about this, but David is the son of Jesse, and Jesse is multiple grandson of a lady named Ruth. And it goes all the way back, and David's great 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 grandfather was Judah. And if you remember last week, that a promise was made that a descendant of Judah, that the scepter would never depart from the descendants of Judah. And so this guy David is the great 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 grandson of Judah, and of course they're all children then of Israel, who are children of Isaac, who are children of Abraham. Jacob, Israel, same guy. And so this promise goes all the way back. And so God made this covenant with David, because David was a man after God's own heart. And God, just not because of what he did, because God chose him and said, I have made this commitment to you. And God promised three things to David. The first thing God promised was a throne. And he said to him in 2 Samuel 7, he says, the Lord declares to you that the Lord himself will establish a house for you. So he's saying this to David, like, I'm going to do this. It doesn't matter what you do. This is not conditional. I am doing this, whether you obey or not. He says, when your days are over and you rest with your ancestors, he says, when you're dead, I'm going to raise up your offspring to succeed you, your own flesh and blood, and I will establish his kingdom. Now, it's important to realize that Saul was not a descendant of Judah. And Saul was not in the same, like, David was a different dynasty. It was a different family. I mean, you know that kings and leaders of kingdoms, I mean, that's kind of the way it works. It gets passed to the next person, the next generation down, and then the crown goes to the next and next. And God says, look, I'm going to provide, there's going to be a throne that someone who is from your line will sit on the throne. And so that was the first part of the covenant, was this throne. The second part of the covenant was that God promised a temple. Because, again, up until this point, the Israelites were worshiping God. God's presence came down at the place called the tabernacle, where they would go and offer sacrifices. And on the Day of Atonement, a lamb would be killed. And there were all these sacrifices that were for their sins. And we will not have time to talk about that. We talked about that a little bit during the Setting the Record Straight series. And some other series, which slips my mind right now, but I remember talking about the sacrifices. But the tabernacle was a tent. It was a temporary place. And so God says to David that I'm promising a temple, that there's going to be a permanent place for you to worship me. And it goes on in the second part of 2 Samuel 7 there, and says, he, this descendant of yours, is the one who will build a house for my name. And what he was saying to David is that, you know, he even said, David said, I want to build a temple for you, God. I want to have a place where we can gather to worship. And God said, you know, you've been involved in too many battles and too much war against the Philistines, against a guy named Goliath. You probably know that story. And he said, but I'm going to allow your son to build the temple for me. And again, if you remember, Jacob, Israel, adopting Joseph's sons was an honor. So doing something for your kids was an honor to the parent. He said, allowing your son to build this temple is going to be an honor to you, David. So your son is going to build my temple. And then he makes this third promise. So it's the throne, the temple, and then a timeless kingdom. A timeless kingdom. And this is really cool. He says to David, and of course this passage was already read this morning during the music. He says to David in 2 Samuel 7, I will establish the throne of his kingdom forever. He says, a descendant of yours is going to be king forever. He says, jumping down to verse 16, he says, your house and your kingdom will endure forever before me. Your throne will be established forever. So God makes this covenant with David and says, look, David, I promise that there is going to be a throne. Your descendants will always sit on the throne of Israel. And your descendant, your son Solomon, spoiler, is going to build the temple. But one of your descendants will have a kingdom that will reign forever and ever. And he shall reign for. We sing that at Christmas time. Maybe we don't sing it. But you hear the Messiah sung at Christmas time. Because this is what it's about. That God is saying to David, you're going to have a descendant that's going to be the king forever. He will always be on the throne. And guess what? Jesus is a descendant of David. That's why the genealogy is there at the beginning of Matthew. Why we ignore it. It doesn't matter. But we did a whole series about that. We'll talk about that in a couple more weeks. But the line of Jesus traces back through David and traces back through Judah and all the way back to Abraham, who God said, and I'm so getting ahead of myself, but God said to Abraham, the world will be blessed by one of your descendants. And God said to David that you're going to have a descendant that will be on the throne forever, that he will have a kingdom that will not end. And it's so important. This is an unconditional covenant. God is doing this whether David obeys or not. And so that's David. That's part of what we see in this covenant, a throne, a temple, a timeless kingdom. It's going to come back more. Again, the promise to Abraham is going to come back. And even the Mosaic covenant, the conditional promise of the law, you obey and things will go well with you, is going to come back. And spoiler two, one of the things we find out about the law is that you can't obey it. And we learn that no person can ever obey this law and always follow God. So God says, I'm going to send someone to do it perfectly for you. But we'll talk about that in a couple more weeks. So anyway, back to coronation. Chapter 6, coronation. We've got Saul for 40, then David for 40. And just to kind of catch you up on the big picture of the Old Testament, David wrote a bunch of the Psalms. Not all of them, but many of the Psalms were written by David as an act of worship. And it's beautiful, and you can follow and read the Psalms. And at MC3, we did three different series, and we're not done because there's 150 Psalms, and that's only, what, 24 weeks there worth of series. So we did a Summer of Psalms, another Summer of Psalms, and yet another Summer of Psalms. You can find them on our website and look at how I and the elders taught some of the Psalms that David wrote and some others wrote. But that covers the Psalms. That's when the Psalms took place. I said the poetry takes place during the history time. So the poetry of the Psalms took place during the time of David for the most part. And then David has a son, and his son's name is Solomon. And Solomon, there's this really cool story. Solomon reigned for 40 years. So Saul 40, David 40, Solomon 40. They reigned for 40 years, give or take. There's some, you know, crossover, and David wasn't dead, and Solomon was getting ready to be the next king and all that. But his son Solomon was the king. What's really cool is there's this moment in Solomon's life where God says, what do you want, Solomon? If I could give you anything you want, what would you get? And Solomon said, wisdom. And so God granted Solomon wisdom. And so aside from Jesus, human on this earth, Solomon was the second wisest person ever. And unfortunately, he didn't always use his wisdom, as we'll see in a moment. But Solomon, going to the whole big picture of the Bible, the Old Testament, and the poetry, Solomon wrote Proverbs. He wrote many of the Proverbs in the book of Proverbs that we have as a collection of Proverbs. He also wrote the book of Ecclesiastes. He also wrote the book of Song of Solomon. So all these poetry books were mostly done by Solomon. He did all of Ecclesiastes. He did all of Song of Solomon. That's why it's called Song of Solomon. And it's a beautiful love poem. And it's just a beautiful story. But all of those things. And of course, at MC3, we've done a couple of series. We did Wise Up and Wise Up Again, which were both series about the Proverbs. And again, there's lots of Proverbs. We're going to come back to that. The elders and I taught that. And way back, like 14 years ago, I think this was the third series we ever did. It was called Life Stinks. And it was about the book of Ecclesiastes that Solomon wrote. So that was Solomon. Those were the books that he wrote. And then this brings us to the next part of our story. Solomon has a son. And his son's name is Rehoboam, and he is now the next in line, and we'll see that in the passage here in a second. He's the next in line to the throne. But unlike his dad, he is not wise. He is not the one that follows, you know, the wisdom that his dad had. And so Solomon's son, Rehoboam,
the people come to him and say, hey, you know, your dad was hard. He was a tough leader. And there were a lot of things that his dad did. And he said, if your dad, Solomon, was the king and was hard, are you going to be a hard leader like him? Are you going to lighten the chains, lighten the load for us? And so he goes to his dad's elders, the trusted advisors of his dad, and says, you know, what should they do? And what should I do? And they say, you know, you should definitely lighten the load. Like, things were tough with your dad, but you don't need to be as tough now. Lighten the load, make things a little bit easier for them. And so then he's like, okay. And then he goes to his buddies and says, okay, friends, you know, what do you guys think we should do? And he's like, dude, they think your dad was tough? You show them that you're even tougher. You show them that, you know, if they beat you with whips, you're going to beat them with scorpions. And I don't even know what that means. But it says, you know, this is something that you need to show them that you're boss. And so it says that Rehoboam rejected the advice of the elders and instead followed his friends. And when he shared it with the people, they did not respond well. And if you look here in 1 Kings chapter 11, it says, then Solomon's son Rehoboam became the next king. It says, the whole assembly of Israel went to speak with Rehoboam. Your father was a hard master. Lighten the harsh labor demands that he had imposed on us. Then we will be your loyal subjects. And again, that's what we already said. And so he goes to the people and comes back and says, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to make it easy for you. And then over in chapter 12, verse 20, it says, when the people of Israel learned of Jeroboam's return from Israel, because Jeroboam was with the leadership of Israel, they called an assembly and made him king over all of Israel. So only the tribe of Judah remained loyal to the family of David. And now we've got this split. And that leads us to this next era of divided for 400. One unified kingdom before, and now it's split into two for good, essentially, which we'll see. So let me do a quick summary of these 400 years with these kings. So first of all, the kingdom of Israel. The kingdom of Israel, and again, there's two kingdoms now. They're split. There's the kingdom of Israel, the kingdom of Judah. And that was just called, Israel was called Israel because there were 10 tribes. Most of what was the nation of Israel is now part of this kingdom of Israel. And then the reason the other one's called Judah is because Judah was huge and little Benjamin, so they were called the kingdom of Judah. But the kingdom of Israel, so let's talk about some basic characteristics between both of these kingdoms. The first part was the clan. So how many tribes were involved? I already said this. There were 10 tribes. So you can fill in the blank there. There were 10 tribes. That were part of the kingdom of Israel. I'm not going to get into all of them right now, but there were 10 that were part of the Israel. And then as far as the compass, which direction, which part of this nation were they? They were north. The kingdom of Israel was the northern part of what was the nation of Israel, what was the land of Israel. They're up north. Again, as we saw during the invasion time when they drew the boundaries, that Judah was on the south and then all the other ones were north of Judah. The third thing is, what kings? How many kings did they have? So clan, compass, kings. There were 19 kings that ruled the kingdom of Israel over its time, over these, well, you'll see in a moment, not quite 400 years. What was the character of these kings? Well, we find out that all of them were wicked. All of the kings of Israel, the northern kingdom, were wicked. That meant there were none that were righteous. None followed God. So their character was bad, and that's going to be a problem because there was this covenant, this conditional covenant that God made with the people through Moses and the law, that if you obey me, things will go well. If you disobey, they will not. And so the leaders, every one of the leaders of the northern kingdom was wicked. So that's going to come into play next week. What about the, how long does it continue? This the northern kingdom continues for 250 years. That this kingdom, again, we talked about the 400 divided for 400. Well, that's because we'll see that the kingdom of Judah lasts longer, but the kingdom of Israel only lasted for 250 years, and you'll have to wait till next week to find out why and what happened. And then, just out of curiosity, what was the control? As we said, that David was not part of the dynasty. He was not part of the family of Saul. He was a new dynasty. So there would have been two dynasties there. So the control of the northern kingdom, there are 9 dynasties. So there's 19 kings. Some of them were descendants. And a dynasty is basically a new family takes over leadership. So like if I pass the kingdom to my son, Thomas, he is now King Tom.
And then let's say, I don't know, Isaac comes in and Tommy, I don't know, dies and Isaac takes over. Now there's the Gensel line. That's a different dynasty that is taking over. So that was how the kingdom of Israel was. 10 tribes in the north, 19 kingdoms, all wicked, none righteous, 250 years, and there were 9 different families. So let's jump over to the kingdom of Judah for the last few moments here. What was the clan there? What tribes were involved in the kingdom of Judah? There were 2. Again, the kingdom of the tribe of Judah and the tribe of Benjamin. Which way did the compass point for this kingdom? As we said, if the other one was north, this one is south. So the kingdom of Judah was in the south of the land, the promised land. They're still in that same land. How many kings were there in the southern kingdom? There were 20. So 20 kings in the southern kingdom. And then what was the character of these kings? We saw that the northern kingdom, they were all wicked. Well, in the southern kingdom, there were 12 that were wicked, which if you do your math, which I can do that, that meant that there were 8 that were righteous. So there were 8 kings. So there were times where the people walked away from God, but then there were good kings that would bring them back. And they would walk away from God, and there were good kings that would bring them back. In this kingdom, how long did it continue? Well, like we said, this is about 400 years. And again, next week we'll talk about why it ended and what happened there at the end of this 400 years. But 12 wicked, but 8 righteous. So their kingdom lasted longer. And again, next week you'll have to hold on to why. And then what about the control? And this is so cool. Remember God's promise to David? He says, I'm going to make your descendant a king forever. Your descendants will be on the throne forever. And of course, we saw that when Jeroboam and Rehoboam and the nation split, that the northern tribes made Jeroboam their king, but the southern tribes remained faithful to the family of David, to Rehoboam, who was the grandson of David. That they followed him. And so the control of this was that there was one dynasty. They were all descendants of David. It was all the same line that continued there. So it's really cool. So that's the coronation era. You've got Saul 40, David 40, Solomon 40, divided 400. And then let's just jump down to the map here real quick just to give you some very basic, obvious things here. So you've got your entire land here that was the 12 tribes that were scattered throughout this promised land that God promised Abraham all the way over in Ur that he would have this land. So they're there, but the kingdom is divided. And now you've got the kingdom of Israel in the north. And basically they cover basically all this north of the Dead Sea. And then you have the kingdom of Judah in the south. But the capital and the temple, because it was built by Solomon, is still right here of Jerusalem, is right there. The O, I put that on purpose. The star right there is right in the middle of the kingdom of Judah, because Jerusalem is still there. Jerusalem is part of this southern kingdom. The throne of the descendants of David are still here in Jerusalem. So, and then here's your pretty map that you can see. It's in your notes there. So that brings us, again, to summarize chapter 4. We've got chapter 6, coronation. We've got Saul for 40, David for 40, Solomon for 40, but divided for 400. And again, the point today was that the conflict in the story continues with the kingdom. So there's still all this tension between the people and God. So let's review the 12 chapters of the story thus far. So I need you to, let's do this since you can't see the screen here and I can't see you. So I will point at the screen and then point at you. And you will say what the first chapter is. Okay. So chapter 1 is creation. It is. And you all just said creation, right? Because you're helping me out here. Okay. Chapter 2 is generations. Chapter 2 is. All right. Chapter 3 of the story, and generations take us to the end of Genesis. Chapter 3 is migration. So chapter 3 is very good, migration. That brings us to the end of Deuteronomy. Now today we picked up with chapter 4, which is invasion. So chapter 4 is, all right. Chapter 5 continues after Joshua into the book of Judges with decision. So chapter 5 is. And then after the time of Judges of 400 years, eventually the people cry out for a king. And we have chapter 6, which is coronation. So chapter 6 is. All right. And that is where we will pick up next week. And I know it's really going to be weird because I'm on the screen, but why don't you pray with me? And it's okay to pray with a guy on the screen. I know that always feels kind of weird. So let's just pray. Father, thank you so much for today. And I know, again, so much content. And I even screwed up some of the content as I communicated it. God, but I pray that you would help us to see the pattern of why disobedience is such a problem and why you are such a good God to us. And we can trust you. We can rely on you. And you will always lead us. And God, I thank you that for even the setup of just the constant failure of the people that you chose, your chosen people, the Israelites, the nation of Israel, and yet they continue to turn their back on you. And God, it sometimes feels good to know that we're in good company. And God, I'm grateful that you knew that wasn't enough, that we needed someone that could rescue us, someone that could be like those judges in the time of persecution, the time of struggle. We needed someone that could be a king forever. And so we thank you for what you have done through Jesus. And we'll look at that more in the future, God. But I thank you so much for that. Help us to grow in you as we consider these things. In Jesus' name, amen.